All right, so we've got this letter, Galatians, and it just seems to throw a wrench into things, you know? Like, here's Paul, this brilliant Jewish scholar, steeped in the law, and then bam, he writes this letter that seems to be saying, hold on, maybe the law isn't the be-all and end-all, it's a head-scratcher.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a question that really resonated with our source for today's deep dive, Dr. Tim Gombas. He talks about how early in his own walk with Christ, he just couldn't square this apparent conflict. The Old Testament praising the law as this beautiful gift from God, and then Paul coming along and, well, seemingly pushing back against it.
Yeah, you open up the Old Testament, you've got Deuteronomy, right? And those Psalms 19 and 119, just so powerful, talking about the law, the Torah, as this incredible guide, a light for our path, pure and good. It could be pretty jarring to then read Galatians and feel like, wait, is Paul saying it's bad now?
It definitely creates some tension. And I think it's a tension a lot of us feel when we're trying to make sense of scripture. We want to see a unified message. And when something seems contradictory, it can be unsettling.
It is. It can really shake you. And what makes it even trickier is that we often come to Paul with all this baggage, with these assumptions about who he was and what he was trying to say.
You hit the nail on the head there. Gombas really pushes back against this idea that Paul is just this easily relatable modern day kind of guy. Like, he'd fit right in at your local Bible study.
Oh, yeah. We've all heard that, right? Like, Paul, he's just like one of us, struggling with sin, talking about grace. It's tempting to make him this sort of proto-evangelical.
Right. But Gombas points out that this can actually be a huge barrier to understanding him. He quotes Ernst Caseman, who warned against what he called the domestication of the apostle.
Love that phrase. So true.
Basically, the idea is that throughout history, we've tried to tame Paul to fit him into our own theological boxes, our own cultural norms. And in doing so, we miss the radical, challenging nature of his message.
It reminds me of something Morna Hooker said. She's a brilliant scholar, and she put it this way. The problem with Paul is that we know him too well, or perhaps we just think we do. We can't let familiarity breed, well, misunderstanding.
Exactly. We have to be willing to let Galatians, to let Paul be strange to us, to resist the urge to just pull out the verses that sound nice and ignore the parts that make us uncomfortable or challenge our assumptions.
Okay, so make it strange. Got it. Now, here's another big assumption we tend to make. We read Galatians as this kind of declaration of independence from Judaism, like Paul is saying, okay, folks, Christianity is here. Judaism is out.
Yeah, that's the classic Judaism versus Christianity dichotomy. And Gombas is very clear that's not what's going on here.
It's not as simple as Paul starting a brand new religion, rejecting everything Jewish.
Nope, not at all. He's a Jewish follower of Jesus, writing to Gentile believers who are being influenced by other Jewish followers of Jesus. It's an intra-Jewish debate, not this clean break between two separate religions.
So imagine it more like different schools of thought within Judaism, all wrestling with the implications of Jesus being the Messiah.
Exactly. They're all trying to figure out, okay, what does this mean for us as Jews? What does it mean for the Gentiles who are now coming to faith? And there were disagreements. So Paul isn't attacking Judaism itself. He's engaging with specific interpretations and practices within that wider context.
Okay, that's a huge point. It's about nuance, about understanding the finer points of the argument.
Absolutely. And this leads us to another crucial point, the whole Torah versus law issue. This is where translation can really trip us up.
You know, it's funny, just saying those words out loud, Torah and law, they feel so different, right?
Right, and that's because they are different. The Old Testament wasn't given as law in that kind of cold, legalistic sense. It was given as Torah, which means teaching, instruction, a gift.
A guide from a loving God.
Precisely. Think of the Exodus, right? God rescues Israel from slavery in Egypt, and then, because he loves them, he gives them Torah, this way of life, a way to stay connected to him and experience his blessings.
It's all about relationship.
But here's what happened. Torah, in Hebrew, became nomos in Greek, then lex in Latin, and finally law in English. And somewhere along the way, that original beautiful meaning got lost in translation.
So when we read law in our English Bibles, it can carry all this baggage, this sense of restriction, of being bound by rules.
Exactly. And that can lead to a very skewed understanding of Paul's argument in Galatians. He might not be arguing against Torah, against God's good instruction.
He might be arguing against a distorted, legalistic understanding of it, against people who are using it as a weapon, as a way to exclude others.
That's a much more nuanced and, I think, accurate way to read him.
Okay, so let's shift gears a bit. Gombas also emphasizes the importance of understanding the social dynamics of the early church. It's so easy for us to read Galatians as this kind of individualistic me and Jesus kind of thing.
You know, we've got our Bibles, we read them on our own, we listen to podcasts on our own. But that's not how it was in the first century.
Yeah, it was a communal experience.
Absolutely. Most people couldn't read, so Galatians would have been read aloud to the gathered church. This wasn't just about personal belief. It was about how the community functioned as a whole.
How they related to each other, how they lived out their faith together.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And remember, the audience of Galatians wasn't homogeneous. You had the Gentile believers who Paul had originally led to faith, and then you had these Jewish Christian teachers coming in and stirring things up.
Creating division, trying to impose their own understanding of the gospel.
Right. So Paul is writing into this very tense, charged situation. It's a highly charged corporate rhetorical situation, as Gombas puts it.
I'm loving these phrases. Domestication of the apostle. Highly charged corporate rhetorical situation. We need to get him on the podcast sometime.
He'd be a fantastic guest. So knowing this context helps us understand why Galatians is so, well, intense. Why Paul uses such strong language. Why he seems so passionate about getting his point across.
It's not just some abstract theological treatise.
Right.
It's a real-time response to a real-time problem.
That's the idea of Galatians as occasional literature. It's like a letter written to address a very specific issue, not meant to be some timeless universal theological statement.
So we can't just lift verses out of context and apply them to any and every situation.
Exactly. We have to understand the occasion, the purpose, the audience. Now, to really get into Paul's headspace, we need to go back even further and understand his background as a Pharisee.
Which is fascinating. I mean, here's this guy who is deeply, deeply committed to the law.
Oh, yeah. Paul was a Pharisee through and through, raised and educated in Jerusalem. He knew the scriptures inside and out. I mean, he had huge portions memorized.
And one thing Gombas emphasizes is the Pharisees' belief in the resurrection. This wasn't just some side note for them.
It was central. Absolutely central. They believed that God was going to act, that he was going to raise the dead, restore Israel, overthrow their enemies, establish his kingdom. And the resurrection was a key part of that whole picture.
And this belief fueled their commitment to living holy lives, both individually and as a community.
They believed that their obedience to the Torah would hasten God's saving action. They were trying to pave the way for God to move. Now, imagine Paul with this mindset, seeing Jesus crucified.
And then you have that verse in Deuteronomy 21:23, "Cursed is everyone who is hung on a tree."
For Paul, that would have been devastating. It would have meant that Jesus was not the Messiah, that he was actually cursed by God. And this new movement, claiming that this cursed man was the risen Lord, it would have seemed like a threat, a dangerous heresy.
So his initial persecution of the Christians, it wasn't just out of hatred. It was actually rooted in his zeal for God, his desire to protect what he believed was God's plan.
Exactly. He thought he was doing the right thing. And then, of course, you have the Damascus Road experience, this radical encounter with the risen Christ.
And his whole world is turned upside down.
It's a total paradigm shift. But it wasn't an easy or immediate transition. Gombas points out that Paul spent 3 years in Arabia, likely in Damascus, really wrestling with this new understanding, reinterpreting everything he thought he knew in light of Jesus.
Followed by that initial and apparently somewhat tense visit to Jerusalem, and then those silent years in Tarsus, where we don't have a lot of historical detail.
Yeah, those are sort of the lost years, so to speak. But you can imagine him studying, praying, thinking things through, really solidifying his understanding of the gospel.
And then he gets pulled into the action in Antioch.
Right. Barnabas goes and gets him. And Antioch becomes this melting pot, this really important center for the early church. But it's also where this tension over the inclusion of Gentiles really heats up.
You've got teachers coming down from Jerusalem saying, hold on, these Gentiles, they need to be circumcised. They need to follow the Jewish law.
Which is the complete opposite of what Paul has been preaching.
And it causes a huge rift. Eventually, they decide to go to Jerusalem for this big council to try to settle the issue.
But here's the thing, and this is key. Gombas suggests that before or around this time, Paul had already heard about a similar situation brewing in Galatia.
Same problem, different location. Jewish Christians trying to impose their views on the Gentile believers.
Exactly. And this explains the urgency of his letter. He's not just writing some calm, detached theological essay. He's fighting for the very heart of the gospel, for the unity of the church.
It's like he's firing off an email saying, guys, this is serious. We need to talk about this.
Yeah, here's one more thing that Gombas brings up, and it's a bit speculative, but it's fascinating.
Hit me with it.
Remember the story in Acts about Paul being stoned in Lystra?
Oh, yeah. Brutal.
Gombas suggests, and this is based on some of the details in the text, that Paul might have actually died during that stoning and then been miraculously brought back to life.
Whoa, that would be intense.
Right. And he connects this to Paul's later mention in Galatians of a bodily condition or illness that he had when he first preached to them.
And how his appearance was a test for them.
It's possible that this illness was a result of the stoning, and that his resurrection, his coming back from the dead, would have had this incredibly powerful impact on those early Galatian believers.
I mean, can you imagine? This guy comes, he preaches this radical message, he gets stoned, seemingly dies, and then comes back.
Mm-hmm.
That would change everything.
Right. It would add this whole other layer of weight to his words.
It would be like, okay, this guy clearly knows what he's talking about.
One last thing about this whole situation. It's important to remember that Paul's relationship with the leaders in Jerusalem wasn't always perfectly smooth. They were separated by distance, they had different priorities, and there were definitely some misunderstandings about Paul's mission to the Gentiles.
So even though those teachers who were causing trouble in Galatia were probably connected to the Jerusalem church, they weren't necessarily speaking for the leadership as a whole.
Right. And that created this kind of vacuum, this space for these other interpretations to take root and cause problems.
So we've got a complex situation here, a lot of moving parts.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important to understand this whole context, to see the bigger picture when we're reading Galatians.
So to wrap things up, it's clear that Galatians is not just some simple letter about ditching the law.
It's a passionate, urgent response to a specific crisis, rooted in Paul's own unique background as a Pharisee who encountered the risen Christ.
And we need to keep all of that in mind if we want to truly understand what he's saying.
And to avoid imposing our own assumptions and agendas onto the text.
Here's something to think about as we leave this deep dive. If Paul was grappling with the inclusion of Gentiles into the people of God, how does that challenge us today? How do we navigate our own differences within the church?
What assumptions do we bring to the table that might need to be challenged? What does it mean for us to truly welcome and embrace diversity in our communities?
Some big questions there, and we highly encourage you to go back and read Galatians again with all of these insights in mind.
You might be surprised by what you discover. And definitely stay tuned for future deep dives, where we'll be exploring specific passages and themes from this amazing letter.
Until then, keep diving deep.